And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to be talking about synchronicity with Dr. Kirby Surprise. So stand by. You'll learn how to use your amazing ability to create synchronistic events. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Kirby Surprise received his doctorate in philosophy in 2007 from the Institute for Integral Studies in San Francisco. He has been an expert on what we talk about, and that is synchronicity. His book, Synchronicity, The Art of Coincidence, Choice, and Unlocking Your Mind. And here's Dr. Kirby Surprise. Kirby, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on the program. You talk about synchronicity and surprise. I was talking with producer Lisa today, and then we had this two-hour opening, and she said, got the perfect person for you. So here you are. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about synchronicity, because I want to talk with you later about coincidence, because I don't believe in coincidence. I think everything happens for a reason. So I want you to talk with me about that. But that word synchronicity, what does that mean?
Well, the word was created by Carl Jung, and it means a state where external events and what's going on inside your head, thoughts, feelings, emotions, seem to coincide perfectly. So that you have sort of what you're thinking is what's happening to you on the outside as well. So the events become synchronized.
Do we create synchronicity, or do elements just happen?
Well, you know, I certainly think that no one has the ability to track ultimate causes, you know, throughout the universe, but certainly we have the ability to influence synchronistic events. And there's sort of two parts to that. I'm a licensed psychologist.
Okay.
So my interest has been, you know, how people's neurophysiology sort of and the way their mind works affects the way they perceive things. Now, to some degree, human beings' natural evolutionary niche is that we match patterns. You know, that's the thing we do better than any other creature. We look in the environment and we filter for the patterns of the various things that we want to find. So we're presented, you know, every moment of the day with thousands of times more information than we actually see consciously. And our brain, that miracle biological supercomputer in our head, has various programs that filter all that information for us and present us not only with only the things that we sort of have been looking for, but it sort of enhances patterns as well. So one of the things that happens, at least psychologically, is we see in the environment the things that we're looking for, that we're concerned with. So, to some degree, synchronistic events happen when you're thinking about something and your brain matches one of those patterns in the environment, and you seem to have one of these moments where you recognize something you've been thinking about. Now, that's sort of a very conservative, grounded view of the way the brain processes. Mm-hmm. But there's also these outrageous coincidences, things that can't be explained by the brain's misinterpretation of information, where events seem to be talking directly to us in the environment. Most people have had the experience at one time or another of thinking or talking in a conversation in a room with somebody, and suddenly a radio or a TV set seems to say something relevant to what they were just thinking or talking about.
Exactly.
Those synchronistic events are a little harder to explain. So what I've done in the book is I looked at the history of the phenomenon, the way the mind processes, and then figured out that we're actually seeing a mirror of some of our own processes in the environment. We actually are influencing the patterns of events around us, which, you know, initially to me sounded, you know, completely crazy, because I'm rather grounded and empirically oriented. But modern physics is sort of telling us that, you know, we live in this probability matrix of the universe, and that apparently we do have a limited ability to change the way the events occur around us. And usually they're actually reflecting what we're thinking.
Is there something within our brain that gives us this ability to create synchronicity?
You know, it's difficult. There is no good connection between physical and non-physical states. One of the things that Jung said was that it was impossible to think about what causes synchronicity because they seem to operate outside of time and space. So, for instance, part of my job is I assess the delusional and psychotic people. And very often you have what in psychiatry call thoughts of reference. People believe that what they're thinking somehow is being referenced by things in the environment. Mm-hmm. You know, the TV's talking to you, or, you know, somebody walks by and makes a comment that you think is about something you're thinking, kind of event.
I had a lady a couple years ago who was convinced I went into her home every night. And she would send me these emails, and she would talk about it. And, you know, I did through the radio.
Yeah.
But she actually thought I was there.
Well, there's a difference between delusions and synchronistic events. So if people aren't taught sort of from the beginning to look for synchronistic events, if you're raised in a culture where that kind of nonlinear perception or reasoning isn't valued, you filter them out. And people stop looking for them, and they stop happening, because they're not sort of on your brain's agenda. The conscious mind chooses what your automated processes look for. So if you don't know they're there, or if you don't believe in them or value them, your brain filters them out. They don't occur. But they're different than delusions. Like, for instance, I had a client who was sent to me with a diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia. And usually when I work with a schizophrenic, you can see thought disorders pretty apparently in how they behave, how they act. You know, they have sort of negative symptoms, which are, you know, sort of blank spots in their affect. Mm-hmm. This guy seemed pretty healthy. And, you know, I asked them, well, you have a diagnosis of schizophrenia. Can you tell me what kind of symptoms you have? And, you know, the guy started talking about, you know, being a little depressed and things that weren't psychotic. And then he said, and there's all that other stuff, but I don't want to talk about that because nobody believes me anyway. I said, well, you know, try me.
Yeah.
And, you know, he told me that all his life he had been plagued by these coincidences around him, and that he was convinced that God had some special plan for just him. He had no idea why, but that, you know, radios and TVs talked to him, and people on the street would walk up to him and have conversations that seem to indicate they knew what his thoughts were, and all these things actually do sound sort of like paranoid schizophrenia. But I realized that he was seeing synchronistic events. He was seeing his thoughts reflected in the environment. And, you know, he seemed amenable to argument. Like, you know, he was rational. Now, if someone is truly delusional, you're never going to dissuade them. That woman who thought you were in her house, you know, you could photograph yourself next to the President of the United States at the same time she thought you were there, and she would never believe you weren't in the house.
No, you're right.
Right. But, you know, that's a delusion. That's something that, despite reasonable evidence, you still believe it. So I talked to this guy, and I said, look, you know, I think what's happening to you is you're seeing your thoughts reflected in the environment, in events. And I said, you know, it's not linear, so it's not cause and effect. It doesn't require energy or a special power. And it doesn't require, you know, that you be special in any way. Everybody does this, just that, you know, some people cue into it and some people don't. And I said, I tell you what, why don't you do this? He had told me that when he watches television, the people on the TV are actually talking about whatever he's thinking about. So I said, okay, so you think God's talking to you? And he said, yes. I said, why do you think that?
And does he seem like a nice guy?
He seemed like a nice guy. Yeah, he seemed fine. But, you know, he had this belief system. And he said, well, who else could it be? What other possible explanation could there be? So I said, okay, instead of listening to it like you're talking to God, pretend you're talking to Bugs Bunny. And I said, what you're going to find is that what you expect is what happens. The personality that you look for is how it's going to respond. And he came back in about a week, and he said, oh, so I'm looking into a mirror of my own thought patterns? And I said, basically, yeah. Now, this poor guy, no one ever told him that this is like basic to all people. Some people sort of accidentally clue into it. Some people never do. But everybody does this. We walk around in these clouds of events and coincidences that reflect our thoughts back to us. And if we understand that, you know, and we don't sort of go all paranoid about it or come up with, you know, fantastic explanations, but realize it's pretty basically a mirror with nobody behind it, you know, with nothing intelligent causing it, then, you know, you get a window into your own thought processes. Now, this particular guy was able to recognize pretty quickly that he was doing this and make some adjustments in his life, but he had wasted a lot of years.
Oh, my gosh.
He thought he was crazy. His relatives thought he was crazy. He would try to explain what was happening around him. And what happened to him was he saw a couple of synchronistic events like 20 years ago, and he didn't understand he was looking at a reflection. So he thought, how is this possible? And the only frame of reference he had was, well, it must be God, because who else could do this? That belief became reflected back to him immediately, and he mistook it as a confirmation that that's indeed what was happening. Now, I've treated a lot of psychotic patients, and I've treated some who are merely sort of confused about this, and they come up with wild explanations, you know, that, you know, must be telepathic aliens or secret government programs or, you know, and whatever they come up with, they see. You know, the events actually mirror that. You know, it's sort of like sometimes when people have a pet bird, they'll put a mirror in the cage with it, and you'll see the bird pecking at the mirror. And what they're doing is they're giving the bird a companion. The bird's not smart enough to know that the mirror isn't actually another bird in the cage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they fight with it, they yell at it, they squawk at it.
And it echoes everything it does.
Right. And synchronicity is very much the same way. You know, we look into this mirror and we see these events that can seem cosmic in scope, impossible to explain. But in fact, there's nothing behind it. It's a simple mirror. Part of it is the way the brain interprets information. And there's been a lot of research that shows that we actually do sort of tweak the environment between 3% and 5%. You know, as a scientist, the very best form of experiment is called a double-blind experiment. This is where neither the experimenter nor the subject actually knows what you're looking for. Somebody else designs it and has another person run it so that the person doing the experiment doesn't know what they're looking for.
No conflict at all.
Right. Well, the thing is, they realize that the act of observing an experiment changes the result. Now, some people will, you know, sort of howl in protest and say, well, no, what we actually think is maybe people are unconsciously tweaking it. No, what they actually found was that if you watch the experiment and you expect it to go a certain way, it changes the result.
That's interesting all by itself.
Yes. So, you know, Jung, who has the standard explanation for synchronicity, looked at it, and he was already sort of on thin ice professionally. You know, he had been a contemporary of Freud's, and he came up with a completely different idea, which was about this sort of this collective unconscious that we're all tied to, and he was trying to say that, you know, it was this very sort of mystical unity of things.
I agree with him, but he came under fire, didn't he?
Oh, terribly criticized, you know, as unscientific. Now, he came up with an explanation that said, well, somewhere, you know, in psychoid space, which is this sort of place between external and internal, there's archetypes, these master patterns for everything, and that maybe when an individual and the environment becomes influenced by one of them, we get these synchronistic events. The problem was, you know, that the explanation doesn't work because people do produce these events, and no one's ever seen an archetype. I mean, it's a theoretical thing that, you know, was sort of a cheat. He also said it's impossible to figure out in our time and space-oriented minds any cause for synchronicity because they seem to hit us from outside of time and space. Now, it was one of his contemporaries, was a guy named J.B. Rhine. He was a psychologist at Duke University in the 30s. And this gambler walks into his office one day and says, Doc, you know, I know this sounds crazy, but I can influence the way the dice tosses come up. So now, you know, normally you would expect, you know, a professor would say, yeah, right, you know, see around.
Yeah, there's the door.
Right. But Ryan did something different. He said, okay, let's get a bunch of dice and a notebook.
Let's test you.
Right. And lo and behold, this guy was changing the odds of probability on dice tosses about 5%. And mine was like, well, no, there's something else going on here. That's just not possible.
But did at that point, did Ryan admit to himself that this was beyond probability?
Yes, he actually took the notebook and charted them out. He did thousands of series. Like, you toss six dice 1,000 times. You plot every toss, and you say you're looking for the number six to come up more often than usual.
Right.
And he found out that people do. And he found out something even more interesting. First, he thought that maybe there's some physical force doing this. The person is using sleight of hand, or it's the way they throw the dice.
Mm-hmm.
So he put them in dice toss machines so nobody could touch them. He isolated them physically completely. The effect was still there. Then he realized something really strange. If you did a series where a person had to toss these dice, say, 100 times, at the very beginning of the trial, their ability to change the outcome was higher. Then, about a third of the way in, this ability dropped off, and towards the middle, the curve drops below normal, and they're actually inhibiting what they're looking for. Then, towards the end, this ability sort of reemerges and, you know, becomes greater than average again. And he realized that what he was looking at was, in the beginning, the person was excited. They were interested in what they were doing.
Yeah.
And towards the middle, they were getting bored. You know, they'd already done this 20 or 30 times.
Sure.
They didn't want to be there anymore, and we'd actually kind of suppressed their ability to change the outcome. And then towards the end, they get excited again. It became interesting again. It was going to be over. I'm going to get to see the results. And the ability rose again, and he realized that what he was seeing was people's emotional states and their expectations were being reflected in the probability of these dice toss. Now, Jung was interested in Ryan's work. He claimed that Ryan was demonstrating synchronicity in the laboratory, but he never bought into the fact that people can do this. Now, Ryan went on to do this for 40 years. He tried everything. He took gamblers and preachers and put them in the same room and found out that there's no difference. He tried coin tosses. He tried the way water vapor falls. He tried the way radioactive particles decay. And he found that virtually anything you could monitor, any random event, you could influence. And there was no physical force involved, but yet there the effect was.
But he never knew why, did he?
No. I mean, he even found things like if you drink caffeine, your ability to do this goes up. If you drink alcohol, which is a depressant, your ability goes down. So it's tied to the brain's physiological state. And this has been the slippery thing about synchronicity. You know, people have continued to do these experiments up until the present day. And what it seems to show is that, yes, you can do this. But, you know, sort of in the experiments where you're in a lab and you're throwing dice, the amount you can sort of psychologically project onto a dice is very small. But in the real world, which is beautifully rich and variant, you can project virtually any pattern. So, for instance, you mind if I tell you a joke?
I tell you what, we're coming up to a commercial. Let's do it when we come right back, if we would. Okay, Kirby?
Certainly.
Dr. Kirby Surprise, our special guest tonight, his website, HowSynchronicityWorks.com, linked up for you at CoastToCoastAM.com. And we're talking about his work, Synchronicity. Fascinating subject, something we talk about here on Coast to Coast all the time. So we'll be back with more next hour. We'll take phone calls with him as well. Maybe you can share a story or two with us. I've been a strong believer in synchronicity all my life. So we'll be right back. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. As we talk about synchronicity tonight, next hour we'll take your phone calls, your stories, your questions on synchronicity. And when we come right back, more with Dr. Kirby Surprise on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Kirby Surprise as we talk about his work, Synchronicity. Kirby, I've got to ask you, too, you have the most unique last name I have ever heard. Is that yours, or is it a pseudonym for your writing, or what?
It's actually my family name.
Is it?
No, I was not crazy enough to change my name to Surprise. Father's name.
I was going to pull out some old Gomer Pyle clips and play them for you and everything. Remember when he used to say that? Yeah. It's fascinating. Anyways, you got a joke for us. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a joke for you. Okay, so a man wakes up on his 55th birthday. He looks at the clock, and it's 5:55 in the morning. He turns on his TV. It's Channel 5. The 5 o'clock news is on. Now, he takes 50 minutes to get dressed. He's on the 5th floor. He catches the number 5 bus to work. And by this time, he's kind of thinking, gee, you know, there's a lot of 5s going on. There's these synchronistic events that are happening around him. So he gets to his work at 555 5th Street, goes to the 5th floor, 5th door on the left, and now he's thinking, gee, you know, there must be a way to take advantage of this. You know, something is going on, and I can see the pattern. So he gets to his desk, and the janitor has left a racing form on his desk by accident. And it's open to the 5th page, and he looks at the 5th horse in the 5th race, and there's a little pencil mark next to it, and his name is Your Lucky Fives. And he figures that's it. This is a message from God.
This is it, yeah. So pile it on.
This is it. So he calls his bookie, and he bets $5,000 on the horse. So he waits till 5 o'clock, naturally, and he calls the guy up and said, how'd my horse do? His bookie says, came in 5th. Now, the story illustrates a couple of things. The first is that, you know, synchronistic events reflect whatever meaning you've already believe in. So the lesson, you know, some people have written books on the subject, and they have this sort of cosmic perspective of let synchronicity always be your guide. And I'm saying, you know, absolutely not. You know, it's like synchronicity reflects parts of you. You know, it knows what you know, and it follows what you believe. Now, as a psychologist, I listen to that joke, and what I hear is, this guy is 55 years old, and he's kind of worried about turning 50. So his concern over being 55 and what he's accomplished in the world gets projected out into his environment. And he starts to experience that anxiety as a series of synchronistic events around him. And then he acts on them, which is the usual mistake people make. So the lesson is sort of cautionary, which is, you know, don't believe everything you think.
That's true.
Now, in a lot of ways, people travel around unknowingly in clouds of these events all the time. I mean, I'm sure you've had people who you think, well, how could they possibly believe that? Well, let's take someone with a very fundamentalist religious belief. Of course, not one that any of us believe in, just somebody else.
Somebody else.
Well, what happens is what they believe becomes manifest in these low-level synchronistic events around them all the time. So what they see is a confirmation of the reality they already believe in. So the world looks the way we assume it looks. It looks the way we believe it is. And, you know, that can be changed. So if you realize that you create these events are created by a part of your unconscious.
That's right.
Part of your transpersonal self. You have a tremendous opportunity to basically, you can talk to the environment and have it talk back to you. And what you're doing is talking to deeper levels of yourself. Now, one of the things that Jung had was his idea of the collective unconscious, that on some level, we're all connected.
Like a wireless internet.
Exactly. In physics, Einstein came out and said something very radical. He said that there's no individual particles. You know, particles are just areas of space that are a little denser than other areas. But there's only one energy field. But there's some localized spots where it's a little thicker than others. If you look in Buddhist philosophy, they're teaching pretty much the same thing. You know, they're saying that there's only one consciousness. There's one entity. That's it. There never was any separation, that it's an illusion. Now, if you were a meditator and you wanted that enlightenment experience, it's called Satori. Synchronistic events are sort of like tiny Satori. They're you seeing that you are not just the conscious awareness that you normally experience. That in the same way that some part of you creates your dreams, your fantasies, and your internal life, there's part of you that creates these events as well. And, you know, they can be an advantage. You know, I think that this ability is part of our natural evolution. I think that it gives us a tiny advantage in our environment because it helps us find the things that we're focused on. For instance, the old thing, well, if this works like this, how come people aren't winning the lottery? Well, it's because if you focus on, I want to win the lottery, you get back a reflection that says, I want to win the lottery, basically.
Right.
So what it can do is, if you look for what you want and the opportunity to achieve what you want in the environment, you start to get presented,
opportunities for
it. Right, exactly. Yeah. It's also an indication that, you know, we are fundamentally connected.
Well, there's no doubt, Kirby, because I have tried this myself. I've even done my own experiments with synchronicity. And I've tested it both ways. As you've just said, the more I push, nothing happens. But the more I just sit back and think about it and just let it happen, it generally works.
Yeah.
Almost all the time.
There's a sort of a neurophysiological reason this happens. The part of you that you think is you is actually on the extreme front lobe of the brain. It's a little area about the size of a walnut just behind your forehead. That's the executive function. It's the part that thinks it's conscious, and its job is to mediate between the external world and the demands of the internal world. The vast majority of the brain, this immense supercomputer that's got more computational power than all of our technology wired together, is mostly automated. You know, if we had to keep track of everything that we do, you know, all our memories, all our feelings, all our assumptions, our emotions, our social situations, we'd be completely overwhelmed. So nature has evolved a system where the majority of our functioning is automatic and unconscious. And this unconscious is intelligent.
Oh, my God, what an incredible machine it is.
Yes, and it does these filtration processes for us. It pays attention to what we're looking for, and then it filters for that in the environment. It sort of photoshops reality, too. So if you think of your situation, it's actually kind of amazing. We have a couple of billion sensory receptors pointed into the environment. They're digital signals. They send digital signals through our nerves, up to the brain, up to the computer. And the computer actually constructs the reality you experience. We have no direct experience of the outside world. What we get is all this information coordinated by this computer in our heads, which builds a virtual environment in areas of memory. That's what we actually experience. That reality around you is actually very modified. We only see like a cartoon version. It eliminates, you know, 99% of the information that we get from our senses as irrelevant and unnecessary. And it looks for patterns. And the patterns it sees only partially, it enhances. So literally, a lot of what you're looking at around you right now is a hallucination. It's composites in memory. Now, synchronicity can happen because we're choosing to see certain patterns. But there's also part of us somewhere outside of the physical that actually tweaks that little bit. And one of the mistakes that sort of the New Agers make is they want to claim that people create their own reality. And that's a wonderful fantasy. You know, everybody would like to like live in a holodeck they control. We don't create reality, but we have some amount of influence on it. Now, modern physics solved sort of unified field theory back in the late 90s. We figured out how everything worked.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most remarkable findings is that we don't live in just a single universe. Now, mystics and clairvoyants and saints have been telling us for thousands of years that there's all these other universes around us. And, you know, like, the reaction that Jung and Rhine got, for a long time, science kind of laughed at that and said, oh, you know, that's ignorance and superstition. But when they solved string theory, they realized they were right.
That's right.
That, you know, this universe rides on like a membrane, like the surface of a soap bubble almost. And that there are literally an infinite amount of these membranes in the air with you right now.
All connected.
All connected and all slightly different.
Yeah.
So, you know, it used to be a science fiction joke that in an alternate reality, Elvis was still performing in Vegas. It's not a joke anymore.
I mean, some may be connected, but they may be empty, void of stars, void of everything. Others, they might have galaxies galore.
Right. The thing is, though, what they're saying is that every possible variation exists. Now, what I'm saying in this book, where I'm teaching people how to create these events and how to interpret them, is that part of us travels through probability. So that, you know, people know that in physics, we measure distance by time. We say light years. Well, there's also distances in probability. Some things are more likely to occur than others. And we're traveling through these infinite probabilities constantly. Like, you know, in an old Star Trek show, there was a transporter accident, and they wind up, you know, with their evil twins on the other parallel universe. You know, every science fiction show that runs out of ideas sometime in their last season seems to do the parallel universe thing. The thing is, that depicts us as traveling between one and the other, when in fact, as people, we're traveling through an infinite amount of them all the time. We span them, and we choose directions in probability. So what you think and what you feel subtly changes the direction you're going in probability to a place where your thoughts parallel the actual events in the environment. So someone would say that the idea of creating synchronicity is very grandiose. You know, it sounds like you think you're the center of the universe. What I'm saying is no, it doesn't take any energy. What you're doing is you're slowly using what tiny percentage of influence you have to move to probabilities that match what you're thinking. And this, when you experiment with it, works very, very well, to the point where people can create consciously entire mythologies for themselves. I mean, if you want to live in a universe where Star Wars synchronicities are rampant because you like Star Wars, you can find them. You can actually cue the environment to behave this way for you. Now, there's an upside and a downside to this. If you're relatively psychologically healthy, this is like winning the lottery. Mm-hmm. It's fun time. You can literally play with the environment like it's a toy. But because it reflects your psychodynamic states, your personality, your experience, your traumas, as well as your health, some people who have been traumatized or abused or have a fear-driven personal belief system project that as well. And they get sort of dark, scary, weird stuff, when in fact, they're still just seeing themselves. So what I'm trying to do is say, look, you know, this is not abnormal. Everybody does this all the time. Okay, we all walk around in this constantly. It's available to play with. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's like the paranoid clients I work with. I try to convince people that, no, there's nothing to be afraid of here. And it's actually absolutely normal. It's just that we're taught from, you know, when we're very young, we're taught magic is real. We're told you can wish upon a star and your dreams will come true. And sometime around latency, we try to tell people, no, you know, we're just kidding. The world is very linear and very dependable and, you know, miracles may happen, but not to you and you can't do any of them. Well, it turns out that, you know, we can. You know, we can change the course. We can change the choices we make in our life by what we look for. And what I'm advocating is teaching people from the very beginning that they can effectively influence the course of their own lives by choosing what they're looking for and creating these events consciously.
If they do not believe it, will it ever happen for them?
It depends on the context. Okay, so I've talked to a lot of people who don't believe it. But it's interesting because, well, let's say, you know, they believe, let's say they're Christians. They will believe that, you know, they see Jesus or God influencing their life. You know, they needed something and it showed up. There was this event that was a message, it was a sign. You know, and that they're allowed to believe because that's faith. They were, you know, told from a very young age that people who believe in their faith are allowed to have this kind of experience in the environment because it's linked to an accepted belief system. But yet, if you tell them these are synchronistic events and you're seeing a mirror of what you believe and you can play with this if you want to, they freak out. They go, no, this, you know, or it's impossible. You know, there's a lot of people in the scientific community that, you know, if they've not looked into it, they'll go, no, well, that's not possible. And then they look at the actual research. There's actually, you know, 60 years worth of research that says, yeah, we've been trying to disprove this, but, you know, it always comes up, it actually works. It's just that the explanation has been rather thin. So what I've developed is an explanatory fiction. It's a good story that gives people the excuse to play with this one fallibility that they already have.
Well, this is an amazing amount of research that people can do in order to change their lives. So let me ask you a question just as an example. If somebody, Kirby, is thinking about a friend and the friend calls them instantly at that moment, has the person who did the thinking create that, or was there a connection between the two?
Well, you know, it's probably both. You know, synchronicity requires sort of a different view of the way the universe works. So we've been taught that things operate in cause and effect, this very linear A therefore B causes C kind of thinking. Well, you know, physics now is telling us that that's probably not necessarily so, that we're existing in multiple probabilities. And so you have your friend, you're thinking about your friend. Well, you're existing in a wide range of probability at that moment, and so are they. Some of those probabilities coincide with them calling you at that moment. So you can sort of steer a higher probability towards those events. Now, the ultimate mechanics of what's going on in the background, that's unconscious. Those are those automated systems that the brain uses that we don't have access to because, well, we don't need to. We're sort of able to rub the lamp and have the grunt work done by those other parts of ourselves. So ultimately, you know, the result is what matters, which is, wow, I got to talk to my friend at that moment.
Yeah. It is an incredible tool, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. You know, the thing about it is, though, it reflects all levels of what we are. So you can cause your conscious, chosen thoughts to reflect in the environment. You can also get what your unconscious is thinking reflected in the environment. So there's been some studies done. For instance, psychotherapists have noticed that, you know, in psychotherapy, which tends to bring up strong emotions, people often create synchronistic events based on past traumas, you know, or things that they've repressed. What you're seeing is all levels of your being at once. That's why synchronicity has been linked to sort of spiritual events as well. You see all levels at the same time. And because we have some choice about what we think and what we choose to feel, we also have some choice about the kind of events we produce. It's not ultimate. You know, we don't design our reality, but we certainly influence it.
Kirby, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with a final hour of phone calls for you. Perhaps you might want to share your story of synchronicity with us, or you just have a question with Dr. Kirby Surprise. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM.